This is Jay Sekulo. Action needed as President Biden's border crisis worsens. 50 dead outside San Antonio.
Keeping you informed and engaged now more than ever. This is Sekulo.
This has become the largest mass casualty investigation in our city, at least in recent history. Homeland Security is now handling this investigation of who's responsible, but we are told three people are in custody.
We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110.
I don't understand this idea that we're going to abandon everything that works, the border wall, MPP, asylum agreements. We're going to abandon all of that. And today you have a border that's wide open. You need to go back to what's tested and true, what works.
And now your host, Jay Sekulo.
Hey, everybody, we've got a jam-packed program with you for you today. Logan's with me. We're going to discuss a number of issues. There's obviously the border crisis is now reaching the humanitarian crisis that we knew was going to happen. 50 dead in San Antonio in the back of an 18-wheeler because of human trafficking. So when we talk about these statistics, these aren't just statistics. These are 50 people that have died because coyotes were taking them across the United States, Mexico border to the United States, in unair-conditioned 18-wheeler trucks. I mean, think about that for a moment. We're going to get into that in great detail. The numbers are staggering. Logan just got a report on one that is, this just tells you what the problem is. And this is just on the border crossing issue.
It just shows that there is chaos happening right now. And this just came out this morning that the Biden administration has signed a 5-year contract to house what looks like 800 unaccompanied minors, essentially, who have illegally crossed the border in North Carolina, essentially in a North Carolina neighborhood, in an old school, an American Hebrew Academy. This is where, again, 800 people are going to be housed there for who knows how long, an indeterminate amount of time. It is sad. You look at this and go, this is a horrifying situation. Obviously, the community is also concerned about what this means for their neighborhood, and what this means for this, because all of a sudden you have a big 800 is not a small group of people.
No.
You've seen some of these where, hey, 30 people are going over here and 30 people are sent over here. We, again, don't necessarily disagree with that methodology, but you have 800 kids.
No, this is horrific. And four individuals from Afghanistan were apprehended last month. Of course, there were a large number, like 50,000, that were not apprehended at the border. I'm sure that number goes up every month. So we're going to get into this with Colonel Wes Smith from our team. We're also going to have a live report from our office in Jerusalem, Jeff Balaban. There's a lot happening there. Also a situation with Iran now in Qatar and Doha doing these negotiations with the Iranians, still trying to get into the Iranian nuclear deal. So that we're going to discuss. We've got also posted, by the way, at aclj.org. I think this is important. A couple of articles dealing with the border crossing and also with the Supreme Court victories yesterday. You want to get those. So we're going to deal with that. We've made an appearance at the United Nations on the issue of Nigeria, which has more Christian persecution than any other country in the world right now. So we've got that. Jordan did a video that was played at the United Nations. That's how you do the interventions now. They allow some in person, some by video. And that was done yesterday. We're going to play that in the last segment of the broadcast. A lot, you're going to hear from a lot of our team today. There's a lot going on. We're going to also take your phone calls on all of these issues and issues of pocketbook concern to you. And that is the rising prices of fuel and food. We're going to talk about all those issues. 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110.
That's right. We're going to continue the discussion on what's going on at the border and the border crisis. Obviously, the tragedy that took place with many dead out of, like you said, being found in a truck.
Yep.
This is the crisis that we're having right now, and we're going to not, just disregard it, move on. So we're going to talk about this in the next segment. We also, like you said, are going to cover a huge variety of topics today and have a lot of guests. So stay tuned. You can be on the air right now. That's at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110 to have your voice heard on the air. Check out the work of the ACLJ, all the great content we put up each and every day from our incredible team here. That is at aclj.org. Again, aclj.org. You can go there. See, again, you can support the work of the ACLJ, but you can also really deep dive in some incredible text and video content, audio content. Again, aclj.org. We'll be right back.
segment one, we're taking calls at 1-800-684-3110. I've only been saying that number for, I think, 35 years. 1-800-684-3110. Wes Smith is with us, and we got to go right to the situation. Horrible situation. 50 people are dead in the back of an 18-wheeler truck that was bringing people illegally. Coyotes are called. They're traffickers. This is human trafficking, folks. Across the border, and they're dead. And this, but the situation at the border is so bad that the president of Mexico is saying it's happening because there's trafficking people and lack of control, in this case of the Mexican-U.S. border, but also in the U.S. interior. This is from, and a lack of control at the border, the worst case of migrant deaths due to smuggling in the U.S. This is what's going on right now.
Yeah, it is an abject failure of their own design. So much could be done. People are telling them, the Border Patrol is telling them things that could help this situation. They are literally refusing to do it. So what is happening, Jay? We have two factors that work here. One is inhumane. When people die like this, and then people crossing the border who are sexually trafficked, the fentanyl, the guy that was caught this week with 150,000 fentanyl pills in his car, coming from Mexico. And so it's inhumane. And if we had a secure border, and by that I mean if there were a wall with orderly ports of entry, and if we returned everyone who crossed except the most obvious cases of a legitimate asylum claim, if we did those two things, a secure border and following immigration law, two things would happen. First, the drug cartels, their business would almost dry up. Because of the second thing, fewer people would be trying to cross the border. There would be fewer people sexually trafficked. There would be fewer deaths. There would be fewer drugs. And then the second factor, of course, is national security. This week, four people from Afghanistan were caught crossing the border. In the last year, 50 people on the terrorist watch list have been caught crossing the border. We don't know how many got away. Those are the ones we apprehended.
I mean, the numbers we're getting at the go-aways are like 50,000. I mean, it's a huge number. It said a high-level, this customer in Border Patrol said that they were with over 50,000, what they call gotaways, in May alone. Andy, that's interesting that the trafficking, and you've dealt with this as a prosecutor, is a problem not just at the border. It's a problem throughout the country because they get the, like Logan said, they're 800 kids are being moved to North Carolina legally in that case.
I'm reading some of these reports because some of the numbers are fuzzy. It may be 800 employees and thousands of children.
Wow. Okay.
That's what some of the other, it's not necessarily clear, but I looked at one article I just read. The version of that story is thousands of kids, but they're having to staff up to even take care of them.
But Andy, it's interesting. The president of Mexico said it's not just a problem once you're past the border, but also in the U.S. interior. In other words, there is such a system in place that these traffickers, human traffickers, get these people in, and then they have a whole national network to disperse them. It's affecting everywhere, and even the president of Mexico says that.
Well, it's amazing to me that the president of Mexico is more knowledgeable about what is happening in the United States than the president of the United States. These coyotes who bring them in, not only bring them in initially through the border, but then disperse them to cities throughout the United States. And now the United States is, as Logan pointed out, concentrating them in smaller cities around the country, 800, 1,000, whatever it is. Can you imagine the impact of the resources of those small towns and communities that they now have to face in feeding, housing, clothing, policing, supervising 1,800 people who are now just plopped into their communities? What about the school system? What about law enforcement? What about feeding them? What about housing them? This is a crisis, and it is a terrible situation that the president of Mexico recognizes, but the president of the United States apparently ignores.
Let's take a phone call, bro.
Let's go to Chris in Chicago on line one. Chris, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. One of my fears is that...
Hey, Chris, unfortunately, I'm going to have to put you back on hold real quick. We'll try to come back to you. There's just some bad wind noise or air conditioning noise. It happens.
I got a question for Wes. Wes, we've also talked about the border situation from a national security perspective. And this is a very serious national security perspective. And you told me before we went on the air that the reports this last week are that in the people crossing the border illegally were four individuals from Afghanistan.
Yeah, absolutely.
They obviously did not come into the United States legally.
No, they did not. And in the past year, since President Biden has been president in this last year of his office, 109 different countries, people from 109 different countries have been apprehended at the border. 109. And those are the ones they've apprehended. And again, we don't know about the getaways. Some say that in the last fiscal year, that's since October, there have been 400,000 getaways, the Border Patrol estimates. This is a real national security crisis. After the 9/11 events happened, the 9/11 Commission said one of the failures of the American people collectively was a failure to imagine what the terrorists would be willing to do. I think we are setting ourselves up for a terror attack because we could not imagine, the administration could not imagine, who might be crossing their border and what their plans are from a national security perspective.
You know, it's interesting because Chad Wolf, as a former acting DHS secretary, said this about these kids, as Logan was talking about. Take a listen.
We have a crisis right now when it comes to UACs, which are unaccompanied alien children. These are individuals that are under the age of 17 years old that come across that border, both legal, mainly illegally. And we have a crisis here because we are seeing numbers of those individuals coming across that border in highest numbers that we have ever seen begin because of the policies of this administration. They exempted all minors early on in their administration from Title 42. So Title 42, which remains in effect today, does not apply to UACs and to minors.
You know, this is, Andy, this is a real tragedy. Law enforcement is telling us that they have what they call assist calls, and they're finding, you know, 14, 15, 16-year-olds left on the side of roads in major cities, and they'll tell the officers they were taken here by their stepfather or their father, and but then they don't know the name of the individual that took them. You had to deal with this as a prosecutor. We've got an epidemic of this right now, and it's really causing havoc in cities throughout the United States.
Well, Jay, you're absolutely correct, and I did have to deal with it as a prosecutor because we had so many of these migrants and illegal enterers coming into the United States and just deposited in places, railroad yards, in front of communal hostels, banks, just deposited on the streets in cities and towns, in front of police stations, in front of firehouses, and abandoned like they were animals. And then you had to care for them. You can't just let them out there and let them just be exposed to the elements and be homeless. Yep. You have to take care of them. Well, what is law enforcement supposed to do? What are medical services supposed to do? Where do we house people like this? How do we deal with the crisis? Well, the president has just ignored it and said that it really doesn't exist. The vice president, who's supposed to be in charge of the border, has gone down in some planned event in El Paso. The president won't even go down there to look at it. And this smuggling of people, like the other day, like the Texas incident outside of San Antonio, I can't even think of a refrigerated truck that wasn't working with 103 degree temperature and think of these bodies in that truck. It's something that reminds me of the horrors of World War II, and it's happening right now in June 2022 in the United States of America.
And let's hear actually from the White House spokesperson about this. What do they have to say about this situation and the crisis in the current moment?
But the fact of the matter is the border is closed, which is in part why you see people trying to make this dangerous journey using smuggling networks.
This is, the border is not closed. I mean, this is preposterous.
Yeah, what a break from reality. The border is obviously not closed. And you know who has operational control of the border? The cartels. Yesterday, Department of Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas said, the cartels don't care about these people. My question is, sir, do you? You know, perhaps individually, I'm sure individually, members of the administration, they care. But the policies of this administration are uncaring.
You know, I think the net effect of this is, Logan, you're trying to verify that report. This has now reached the levels where we don't have control on the situation. Now, we're going to get probably, Andy, tomorrow, the Remain in Mexico policy decision from the Supreme Court, another big one. And that may have an impact, but if the administration doesn't have a plan, it's not going to help anything.
No, it doesn't. And we trust that the Supreme Court decision is going to uphold the Remain in Mexico policy. But one of the things that President Biden did, the first thing he came in, was reverse the salutary policies of President Trump. The wall, the Remain in Mexico policy, all the policies that President Trump had put in that were working And then to come out with a ridiculous statement through his press secretary that the border is closed. What are you talking about?
Right.
Who do you think we are? Idiots out here?
Well, this is no. I mean, this is that was a preposterous statement. All right. Coming up in the next segment. We expected this. It has now happened. Kentucky, Utah, and Louisiana all facing lawsuits. Louisiana and Utah, a judge has enjoined the state law that put restrictions in place on abortions. We knew this was coming. We're going to get into this in great detail. We'll take your calls at 800-684-3110. Frank Mannion from our office in Kentucky is going to be joining us. We've got a lot to discuss.
That's right. 1-800-684-3110. We have some phone calls that are on hold. Stay on hold. We'll get to you when we can. Obviously, a few lines are open as well, so you can call in right now. 1-800-684-3110. Continuing this conversation, you said we're going to shift in the next segment, talk a little bit about what's happening in the life situation, obviously, with the overturning of Roe, what that means state by state. We've seen a lot of things going on, and we're going to cover some of those, specifically what's going on in Kentucky, in the next segment. We'll be right back. Later on, so give us a call at 1-800-684-3110. We're still talking about the border crisis, but we're going to be shifting in this segment to talk a little bit more about, obviously, a historic week for life, historic week as Roe's overturned. But now, as we expected, it's going back to the states, as the Supreme Court ruled, and that is going to be 50 new battles.
Literally, more than that. In states that, you know, we initially people thought, well, the states that have kind of a pro-life majority are going to be fine, and then the states that don't, you've got to work in. But Frank Mannion, senior counsel for the ACLJ. Frank, you and I have been doing this work for, you know, I don't want to date us, but let's say 40 years. So that's a good number. We're thrilled with the decision in Roe. But right there in Kentucky, where your office is, you've got a challenge there. There's been one in Utah and Louisiana. And in Utah and Louisiana, the courts have issued temporary restraining orders, not allowing the pro-life legislation to go in effect even after the Supreme Court decision.
Yeah, Jay, and we're not shocked by that, I guess. And I don't hold out a whole lot of hope that the court in Kentucky will do anything different than the court in Louisiana and Utah. You know, Kentucky is generally considered a very conservative place. Supreme Court justices are elected. But in the past, and they've never confronted an abortion issue directly because it was a federal matter until Friday. So we don't really have a track record. But I have to say that, as you know, these cases are filed on the basis that the state constitution does protect the right to abortion, even if the federal doesn't after Dobbs. And there is a significant amount of right to privacy case law in Kentucky already, which is what the ACLU is banking on. They've already sued. They sued yesterday. They've obviously been waiting for this because, you know, the filings that they filed yesterday are, you know, they're from the ACLU National. This isn't the local Kentucky ACLU.
Okay.
They're changing the names of the states, you know, and the case law that they're citing. So they're ready to go.
Frank, I've said that a lot of this is going to ultimately come down to the state Supreme Courts. So like take Kentucky, for instance. I don't know what the situation there is. How does your court view these issues?
I think I'm not that optimistic with the state Supreme Court because of their long history of sort of mimicking what the Supreme Court has done with privacy and, you know, bodily integrity and all that sort of thing. I could easily see them siding with the ACLU on this. But the good news in Kentucky is the issue is on the ballot in November. In November, we already have a referendum which will decide whether or not there is a right to abortion in the Kentucky Constitution. So in a sense, the court matter here, the litigation is a bit of a sideshow because the voters are going to decide this in November, and Kentucky voters historically have been extremely pro-life. So I'm much more optimistic about winning there than I am about winning at the courts. But we'll see.
But then you also have a very liberal governor in Kentucky. And a lot of our comments, a lot of people from Kentucky that are listening. So that does put a weird counterbalance. You think of Kentucky as a very conservative area, you know, elected officials you think would be representative. But Kentucky is kind of one of those anomalies where it can kind of go either way.
But Frank, you raised the point of the legislative initiative and ACLJ action. Our 501c4 is looking at these states because we came to the same conclusion that you're not going to just be able to rely on the state Supreme Courts here, that it may take constitutional amendments in the state legislature to get through that the people actually vote on these issues. So What does the fight look like in your view here? I mean, are we talking about 50 states probably or possibly?
It's quite possible. And yeah, I mean, this is exactly what Dobbs said. You know, people are freaking out about it banned abortion. Well, no, it didn't. It gave it back to the people. That's what, you know, the conservatives on the Supreme Court have been saying for decades. As you know, this is a matter that should never have become a federal judicial matter. It's a matter for the people to decide. And people in places like Kentucky, I suspect, are going to decide in a very pro-life way. Other states are going to decide differently. And, you know, that's the way it is. I will point out that as Logan makes the point that we have a liberal governor, but we have a very conservative attorney general who's completely at odds with the governor. So he is vigorously defending this particular law, Daniel Cameron. He also happens to be running for governor. You know, we've already reached out to his office and told him, you know, contact us if you want amicus support, anything else we can do. But I am very confident that that this law is going to get a top-notch legal defense from the attorney general's office. You know, sometimes attorney generals, when faced with laws they don't like, kind of put up a half-hearted effort in defending these things. But that's not going to happen here in Kentucky.
Yeah, like we said, Laura on YouTube said Kentucky has a very liberal governor. What is his role in this? So what about the conflict between the governor, Frank, and the attorney general?
Well, it's interesting because our current governor used to be the attorney general.
Right.
When we had Matt Bevin as governor. So those two went at it all the time. And we're seeing sort of the reverse thing now with Beshear as governor and Cameron. Cameron has already announced, and I'm sure they're in the process of filing today, that they're going to vigorously defend this law. So I don't have any doubts that, you know, the governor doesn't have much to say about it at this point.
So ACLJ action, just so everybody knows, is looking at it legislatively, constitutional amendments. ACLJ is looking at it from a litigation standpoint. Frank Mannion, senior counsel with the ACLJ, appreciate your comments on this and being with us. But I'll tell you this, Logan, this is exactly what we said was going to happen. Now, it's happening quickly, but we have been prepared too. The decision of the Supreme Court was great. It returns it to the states, and I think the fight's going to be in the states.
Yeah, and actually, I'd be interested to hear from people who are more pro-choice in the fact that I feel like they're putting their money and their time in the wrong places. You see people supporting Planned Parenthood. You see people putting their time at protesting when really it's the Supreme Court decision. It was what it was, and now it's where litigation is going to take place. It's where they're going to go to the courts to battle this out and inevitably go to the elections and upcoming elections when this happens. So that is, to me, an interesting part of this. I think people's natural reaction on either side is take to the streets and protest and donate to these organizations. They really can do nothing. Even if you're a pro-choice person, they can't do anything right now. Supreme Court has ruled. So now it takes it to the court, and now it's going to get interesting. I hope people get more educated on actually where they need to be putting their support.
Well, I think that's right. And there's going to be a lot of talk right now, but and people are trying to rush statements out, and we're saying we have to do this thing very strategically, very wise, very smart. You look at a state like Kentucky, it's a perfect example. Republican AG, Democratic governor, conservative legislature, looks like a pretty liberal Supreme Court in Kentucky.
Yep.
So then you got to look and say, okay, well, we could go with that challenge up to the Supreme Court of Kentucky, but also we may need something else legislatively. And that's where it's going to take real analysis. And we've got teams of people working on this right now. I mean, literally teams of people in our office in Washington, in our office in Kentucky, around the country, to deal with these precise issues. So again, I want to be clear that these are big issues. We're prepared. We're just being really strategic on how we engage this. I do want to take this call. We're going back to the situation on the border from Mark. I think we should address it. We'll take more calls at 800-684-3110.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go ahead. Or is he on the air? Mark, you're on the air.
Hello, Jay. How you doing?
Great.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Great.
I was just curious, like Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, California, why couldn't these governors deploy their National Guards to shut the border down?
Because there's been a conflict between the states calling up the National Guard, the governors, and the federal government nationalizing the National Guard, so to speak. So this has been an ongoing battle. And what we're really hurting on the border, whether it's the 800 or so kids that have been sent to unaccompanied minors, sent to North Carolina.
Carolinas in a residential area by a Target.
You know, this is like a disaster waiting to happen. Yeah. Or the 50 people that lost their lives. When you have bad policies, you get really bad results. So again, we could have a stay in Mexico policy. That we could have Title 42, the adjudications, and release them out. But this administration doesn't want, they are ignoring the threat on the border. Maybe now with the death, unfortunately, of these 50 people. These are human beings, lost their lives, trying to get to the United States. This is an administration that's so out of touch. Let's see if they respond to it. We'll be back with more, another half hour of the broadcast in just a moment.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jay Sekulow.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the broadcast. Welcome to the second half hour of the broadcast, if you're just joining us. We talked about the border crisis. We talked about the situation on the litigation now over the outcome of Roe versus Wade. This next half hour, I want to focus on some international matters. In fact, we're going to hear from Jeff Balaban from our office in Jerusalem in about 5 minutes to let you know what's going on in the Middle East. There's a lot happening there. But also, we're going to get into what we're doing at the United Nations with Van Bennett. Jordan made a what's called an intervention. That means an oral statement to the United Nations on a situation in Nigeria. Nigeria, unfortunately, was removed from a list of particular concerns by the State Department. We talked to Mike Pompeo about that. Yet, in Nigeria, a Christian is killed for their faith every 2 hours. And from October 2020 till September 2021, ready for this? More Christians were murdered for their faith in Nigeria than in any other country. And yet, by the way, that number is 4,650 during that period. Nigeria accounted for nearly 80% of the Christian persecution death cases worldwide. And the State Department takes them off of the country of particular concern list. This is how out of touch they are. Again, you're talking about basic fundamental human dignity, the right to believe in your conscience, your faith, and to not lose your life for it.
So what's the benefit to them for doing this, for removing it?
So they get to focus on other things. They can have economic benefits. There are things that they'll do.
Yeah, but when the United States, for taking them off the list.
Nothing that outweighs the death toll that's taking place here. Nigeria was on the list, put on the list by the Trump administration. Mike Pompeo was written about it on ACLJ.org. And that's one of the things I want to talk about. I mean, look at the people that we have that we're working with. Former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, former Director of National Intelligence Rick Grenell, both of which were cabinet members in the previous administration. So, I mean, we're dealing, and they're part of our teams, and not just on radio. They're helping us on a whole host of areas. And I think you have to understand the nature and scope of what's going on as we go to an international focus here, that this is really serious. And we've got to be concerned when people are losing their lives for their faith, whether it's in the Middle East, whether it's in Africa, wherever it might be. We have got to be concerned. We'll take your calls on all this too at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. I am concerned also that as we talked about the border situation in the last half hour of the broadcast, that we are about to have a migration crisis worse than any we've seen. Do you know that the number of what they call contacts last month, the numbers are staggering. 239,000, almost 240,000 migrant encounters of May of 2022. And it was high last May in 2021 at 180,000. So you've had more than 60,000 additionals. And it's also higher than the 235,000 encountered in April of 2022. That's every month, a quarter of a million encounters on our border. And you've got the press secretary saying the border's closed. So all of these affect international matters. That's why the ACLJ, with our resources around the globe, can fight on all of these fronts. But we have got to get border security in place, folks. We have got to get the immigration system fixed. We cannot have people coming over in unair-conditioned trucks. We need a remain in Mexico policy until your case is adjudicated. This is unacceptable, period. And it's a violation of basic human dignity.
Yeah, but we are taking your calls on this and the other topics at 1-800-684-3110. Once again, that's 1-800-684-3110. Clear through some of the calls. We actually have quite a few open lines right now. So if you want to be on the air, this is the time to give us a call. Again, that's at 1-800-684-3110. Whether it's on the border crisis, whether it's on the life laws, we'll take them on all the topics we've gone over, and we'll keep going. If you have questions that are about those, and we'll take some more at the end of the show as well. So again, that's at 1-800-684-3110. 888-664-3110. I encourage everyone to visit ACLJ.org. As I said earlier, not just a place to go. I know we say go support the work of the ACLJ, go donate. Obviously, that's what we'd love you to do. We'd love the support. However, our team creates incredible content, so make sure you are on there checking out all the videos, all the articles that are posted, all the blogs at ACLJ.org and on all social media platforms.
Everyone, taking your calls at 800-684-3110. We're going to go right to Jerusalem, where our leader of our Jerusalem office, Jeff Balaban, is right now. And Jeff, there's a lot in the news. There's a lot to talk about. Let's kind of unpack it one at a time. We just had a report for those that were watching on our social media platforms about what is going on with Iran and their nuclear capabilities and this big concern that they have advanced significantly. Yet at the same time, we're finding out that the United States is in these sort of talks with the Iranians in Doha, Qatar, about still trying to get into this Iranian nuclear deal. What are you hearing on the ground now that you're in Jerusalem?
People are absolutely stymied. They're trying to figure out, and they're asking me as an American, what on earth this administration can be thinking. You know, if you want to destabilize the Middle East, destroy all of America's interests, side with brutal dictators over their people, encourage massive global terror, and ultimately give nuclear weapons to the enemies who declare that America is the great state and Israel is the small state. And this is exactly what you would do. So why are they doing it? And that's what people are asking. They're asking me for the answers. They don't see the answers.
Yeah, so here's the question, though. You know, of course, the United States is not doing these directly, right, Jeff? I mean, this is the subterfuge of all of this. They're doing this through, what do they call it, you know, intermediaries, third-party governments. But why would you put, I mean, it makes no sense to me with all the progress that was made in the Middle East with the Abraham Accords and so many other issues. You and I were there for the embassy move from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. These were historic moments, and the Middle East did not explode. In fact, to the contrary, things got much better and much more stable. But now you give Iran this kind of rope, and then you have Saudi Arabia, who now has relations with Israel, Jordan, Egypt, UAE, a lot of the other Gulf states are saying Iran with the nuclear weapon will wreak havoc in the region and will be deadly, literally, and they are the largest state sponsor of terror.
Look, okay, I don't want to play amateur psychologist here, but all I can think of is, and this is what I'm telling people who ask, is this is consistent, not with America's interests, but with the left's utopian vision of themselves as masters of the universe. It's the same thing as pretended they're going to change the climate and defeat a virus. And, you know, it seems to be their ideas. Wouldn't it be great and demonstrate how godlike we are if we could rehabilitate the Muslim Brotherhood and the mullahs in Iran and the Palestinian Authority and make them not terrorists, but peaceful statesmen, and we're going to solve the world. Okay, that's great, except what it actually causes in real life is massive destruction, bloodshed, death, and it destroys America's interests as well as any of our allies. And you're right, Jay, we just saw spectacular success with the Abraham Accords. And yet they seem to want to walk exactly in the opposite direction.
So you got this shift going on. You had the previous talks with the Iranians were mostly done by the Europeans and Russia as an intermediary. Go figure that one out. And now, and those were in Vienna. Now they're using Qatar as the intermediary. How dangerous do you think this is, Jeff? I think it's on a road to disaster.
Exceptionally dangerous. Look, and I said this the last go around when the Obama-Biden administration was moving in this direction, you know, forget about the nuclear warheads for a second. The fact that Iran already has intercontinental ballistic missiles, ICBM, they don't need them to reach Israel. They can use them to reach Chicago. And we need to recognize that Iran openly states its desire for our destruction all the time. And we have more and more evidence, thanks to Israel, by the way, thanks to Israel and their missions, their dangerous missions to reveal what Iran actually, how they've been cheating, etc. We have evidence of how much they've been lying and cheating throughout. So why do we want to go back in there again? Yes, Jay, it is dangerous. And besides the ultimate danger for us in America, of course, this means massive increase of funding of terror and destabilization, especially in the Middle East, but often around the world.
All right. So I want to go to the domestic situation politically in Israel, because obviously big news last week with the government falling, so to speak. What is the latest development there?
Maybe we need to actually explain to people how the government works.
I think that's a really good idea, Logan.
I think that we hear the headlines, and look, sometimes I'm confused. So right. Maybe we need to break it down a little bit because we're so used to American politics.
Yeah, it's not a constitutional republic in Israel, Jeff. So I think it's Logan actually is right. Let's start from the beginning here and describe this coalition. It's more like the British system, this coalition government. How does it work?
So here, you don't vote for like the two major parties and you don't have direct elections for a party. There are numerous parties and people vote for numerous parties. And then the parties have to see, based on how many mandates or seats they have to be in the Knesset, in the parliament, try to group together to get a majority of 61. Okay. And that's where the fun begins, because the coalition building is then becomes a lot of horse trading. For me, it always resembled most in American politics what the Appropriations Committee looks like, where the Democrat-Republican matters a lot less than deal-making. And so it's the ultimate deal-making. And for the first time, the last government or this present government was formed by a couple of groups on the right breaking in completely new direction and actually forming a government with Arab parties. Now, there have often been Arab members of parliament. That's not a surprise in Israel. But these are parties that are not pro-Israel parties. These are parties that actually side openly with Hamas, a terror group, Muslim Brotherhood parties. And so it was a shocker when supposedly extreme right-wing Zionist parties formed a government with them, and people thought it wouldn't last. And for a year, it lasted with a lot of tension. And then it looked like things were beginning to collapse. And Bibi Netanyahu, who has been the opposition leader because he couldn't form a majority government last time, looks like he was gaining power because the right was realigning, saying they don't like the current situation.
We know that it could fall like on a moment's notice, right? I mean, it could just literally fall apart, which it did because some of the coalition partners pulled out. Where is it now? There's a lot of talk that Netanyahu may be coming back and trying to put his own coalition together. Does that look realistic or not so realistic right now? What does it look like? You're there.
It looks highly realistic. A lot of the schism that existed among the right, which is to say the national religious parties, the Zionist parties, the secular Zionist, the pro-Israel parties, I guess we would call it, even though a lot of the other side here may call themselves pro-Israel, they don't like what they've seen in the last year. They think certain red lines were crossed. And so even though some of them may have issues with Bibi Netanyahu's dominance, and he's been a major the major dominant political figure for decades, it seems they may be aligning, and that's the hope. And that's actually, but it's by no means clear that that will happen, because there are a lot of personality issues, and there are a lot of personal political futures at stake. So it's a race against time to see if Bibi Netanyahu can put together a coalition of majority, and that's actually why the current government are the one who called for this government to stop, so that they have a chance to quickly reestablish it and not allow Bibi to have a little more time to call for the government to end, so that he could have already established his coalition. People are on the right generally are hopeful that Bibi will be able to pull it together again, but it is by no means certain.
When do you think we'll know?
Oh, I don't think we'll know for quite a while.
Months?
Look, I wouldn't be shocked, and that's also when I'm talking to people here, including I talk to some of the best well-known political analysts on both sides of the political spectrum, and they are up in the air with this. It could happen anytime, it could happen quickly, or it can drag out possibly for months, 3 or 4 months.
All right, last question here, Jeff, and that is we do a lot of representation at the International Criminal Court in The Hague. You've got all these complaints being filed regularly by the Palestinian Authority, but we also do a lot of work in Judea and Samaria. You were just out, I think, yesterday or the day before. Give us the latest, and just describe again. Let's going back to what Jordan Logan said. When we talk about Judea and Samaria, tell people what we're talking about.
Sure. So, what the world likes to call the West Bank for the last couple of decades is actually sort of a hostile name that was given to a region known as Judea and Samaria, literally since Bible times, and the world knew it as Judea and Samaria. It was always Judea and Samaria, except when the Jordanians invaded so that Israel couldn't have its state in 1948, they took control, and they called it the West Bank, meaning the West Bank of the Jordan River. That whole area, and we don't have a map here, but maybe next time we'll do a graphic, that area is very contested. But it is, in fact, very much the indigenous homeland of the Jewish people. It is very much the Bible talks about all the places in the Bible are there. Yep. Jerusalem is part of that area. Right. And so Now, it's being disputed. And once again, the Biden administration, like what they're trying to do apparently in Doha, they're trying to rehabilitate the idea of a Palestinian Authority, which really for decades has demonstrated no interest in peace and just interested in terror.
Right.
And they're in control of the Palestinian population there. And the Israelis are controlling the general security borders there. And there obviously are Jewish communities there and Arab communities there. And they're much less integrated than they are in the main part of Israel. And so yesterday I spent the day in Judea. Tomorrow, actually, we haven't talked about it. The plan is to go to Hebron and then on Thursday to spend the day in Samaria, catching up with people who are local leaders, seeing what's going on the ground there, what kind of challenges they're facing, both in terms of the future of sovereignty and control and safety and security there and how we can help them.
You know, let me say this. It's not many groups have an office operating in Jerusalem and have a senior lawyer like Jeff Balaban running that operation so that we're involved in all of the, not just the political issues, the legal issues, the sovereignty issues for the Jewish state. And we've been committed to this for 40 years. We've made multiple, I made multiple appearances. We have as a group at the International Criminal Court in The Hague successfully. We're going to continue that fight no matter what jurisdiction, UN or any place else, to defend the right for a Jewish homeland, including Judea and Samaria, which is part of biblical Israel anyway. So it's, you look at it that way. I wrote a whole book about it called Jerusalem. We'll be back with more in just a moment. Thanks, Jeff.
To Secular, I would wrap up today. We actually have a very interesting segment to get to, including my brother presenting at the UN today. Maybe, Dad, you can give a little brief understanding of what that is. And also, Than Bennett's joining us from Washington, D.C.
Than is our Director of Government Affairs and our UN representative. I want to set the stage for this a little bit and give a little aspect before we go to what Jordan actually did at the United Nations today. And that is, Than, when we talk about these interventions on countries of concern that we have, is because we get a chance to speak to the entire General Assembly or at least the Human Rights Commission, whoever it might be. Explain this to our audience so they understand exactly what we're talking about before we see that actual video.
Yeah, Jay, I actually think this is one of the most important components of our international work, and it's important because we're one of the lone voices that is actually going to represent an ideology of freedom, an ideology of democracy, and actually just independence. Jay, this is why we work so hard through our European Center for Law and Justice to get consultative status so that when the United Nations would meet, whether it's the General Assembly in New York or today, like you're going to hear from Jordan, at the Human Rights Council, they're holding their 50th session in Geneva. Jay, inside those rooms, if we weren't present, a lot of times the atrocities that you're going to hear Jordan talking about in just a minute, they wouldn't even be mentioned in these councils, even though they are allegedly meeting to address human rights abuses. So we got that consultative status, especially for times like with this, when the U.S. administration, Jay, is not going to be very forceful in showing up and pressing the case for persecuted Christians around the world. That's what we do. And even during a time of COVID where even now, some of these presentations are done virtually. Our status, Jay, gives us the opportunity to be inside that chamber in Geneva and pressing the case for those who are persecuted.
And this particular intervention is about Nigeria, which was listed as previously as a country of particular concern to the United States. We sent a letter on June 8th to Secretary of State Antony Blinken expressing concern and outrage, frankly, over the lack of understanding this difficult situation that Christians are having in Nigeria, and in fact that the delisting of Nigeria as a country of particular concern. We actually went directly to the State Department on this.
This was an inexcusable decision by the Biden administration, Jay, and this actually gives a glimpse of how we're going to address the issue in Geneva. We're also going to address it domestically. I heard Logan ask you in a segment before, why in the world would the U.S. have removed Nigeria from this country of particular concern list? Jay, I really think there are two reasons for it. Number one is maybe more broad. It's because it supports their policy of appeasement. They just want to sort of let everybody get away with things around the world. But Jay, here's the second thing, and people just need to hear this truth. They did this, Jay, right before President Biden made his trip over to Nigeria. So it was sort of greasing the skids for his trip. So we're going to show up today. Jordan already did. You're going to hear this audio in just a minute and tell the truth when the Biden administration specifically did not.
All right. We're going to go ahead and play for you Jordan's intervention that was played at the United Nations just hours ago. Take a listen.
Thank you, I recognize the European Center for Law and Justice.
Thank you, Mr. President. Nigeria has the third highest number of internally displaced persons in Africa. Such displacement is caused by the violence perpetrated by terrorist organizations like Boko Haram and Fulani militants. These groups operate with impunity, murder Christians because of their faith, burn down their homes, and kidnap their children from schools. In Nigeria, a Christian is killed for his or her faith every 2 hours. In fact, more Christians were murdered for their faith in Nigeria than in any other country. Boko Haram and the Fulani militants have already carried out numerous attacks against Christians, causing further displacement of innocent citizens. Most recently, on June 5th, over 50 Christians were massacred while attending a Pentecost service at a Catholic church. In May, ISIS extremists ruthlessly executed 20 Christians to avenge the death of ISIS leaders in the Middle East. Also in May, the Fulani militants killed 8 Christians, including 2 children, looted valuables, and destroyed Christian homes. Hundreds of residents fled the area. As if the initial violence was not sufficient, Boko Haram placed a bomb in a camp for the internally displaced. Fortunately, a bomb squad was able to defuse it. The ECLJ asked the council to hold Nigeria to their international commitments and stop this bloodshed, protect innocent human lives, and punish the perpetrators.
Well, there you have it. So, Fan, when Jordan does those, or you do those, or CeCe, or some of our international team, who are we talking to? I mean, this is what people need to understand. We just had a report from our office in Jerusalem. Now we're talking about work at the United Nations. Who are we talking to here?
Well, today you're talking to every member of the Human Rights Council, which essentially is every country of the world. Now, there's going to be times where maybe a country or two cycles off for various reasons. In fact, you remember the United States left the Human Rights Council under President Donald Trump for a brief period of time. But essentially, depending on the venue, Jay, you are addressing the entire world. And I actually think it's against the backdrop of this administration that makes it so important, because typically it would be the U.S. government that would be making this case, Jay, standing up for those who are being persecuted around the world. You're not going to hear that from this administration. That's why we stay there during these times to do it. And Jay, you know, Nigeria is in the news, so this is particularly important, the intervention that Jordan did today. But this is just the latest in a long string of these that we've done. Earlier this session, Christoph Fulzenlogel from our Strasbourg office delivered one on Myanmar. In just a few weeks, Jay, we're delivering 14 universal periodic reviews for countries all over the world that have similar abuses. So look, it's just another opportunity. You called it the Ministry of Presence, Jay. It's literally Ministry of Presence around the globe.
You know, we're playing this today. We've covered a lot of topics because of kind of the breadth and scope of the American Center for Law and Justice and the outreach that we have around the globe. Then I want to go to domestic politics for a moment here as we close the broadcast out. What is your sense of what, and we've got this disaster on the border, a horrible humanitarian crisis, 50 people dying in an unair-conditioned 18-wheeler truck crossing the border illegally, coyotes, you know, human traffickers. And the Biden administration says, oh, well, the border's closed. Well, it's not. But it's more than that. Is there any talk in Congress about doing anything to fix this mess, or just not the votes on anything?
Yeah, I mean, there were proposals, Jay. There have been proposals there for some time. But unfortunately, the real truth of this is the Democrats in the Congress, both the House and the Senate, won't provide the votes, even necessary just to stop maybe trafficking, Jay. I mean, take that issue. That shouldn't be partisan. It should be very easy to come to a conclusion. Marsha Blackburn's had a bill pending in the United States Senate for months and months and months. It has not moved. But, Jay, I think today's story is a specific example of something that you've said on this broadcast many, many times. Closing the border, making sure that you have operational control of the border. Guess who that is most compassionate to? It's most compassionate to the people who are trying to come to the United States for a better life, because it gives them an orderly and a safe way to do it. Without operational control of the border, what happens to those people?
Chaos.
They die in the back of trucks, Jay.
And then Logan reported earlier in the broadcast that there's a report, and we're trying to get the numbers, but it could be 800 unaccompanied minors are being sent to North Carolina.
Thousands, of going to unaccompanied minors across the border being sent to North Carolina to essentially live and work in a school, an abandoned old school that the Biden administration has leased for the next few years.
That's unreal.
So it's a very sad crisis.
Those headlines human consequences.
The headlines seem wild, but you do have to remember, like you're right, there are human beings behind all of this.
All right, folks, you've got a thanks, Dan. We gave you a good look at the work of the American Center for Law and Justice. Let me tell you ways to stay engaged with us at Jay Sekulow at ACLJ. Good ways to do it. We're also on a lot of social media platforms, too.
That's right. We're available right now on all your favorite social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You can also find us on Truth Social. You can follow all of us at Rumble, Jay Sekulow, Rumble, at Jordan Sekulow, at Logan Sekulow. Yep, Rumble and YouTube. We're available on all of those outlets as ACLJ and as individual personalities. So make sure you go follow all of them. We appreciate it. We always put up great content each and every day. Some incredible content made by our team. You can find all of that also at ACLJ.org. We'll talk to you tomorrow.